in Ottawa at this EKOOP Uppsala. That was where I was, second time I was running a CLOS tutorial. And those were the heady days when CLOS and Smalltalk and C++ were all big ideas and on equal footing. But the night came and I became thirsty, and my colleague Gabriel and I went somewhere for a drink, and we had three hamburgers for lunch. They were Roman Kunis, Volker Harshloff, and Ralph Mueller. So we had a few beers together, and what a fortuitous arrangement that was. Roman Kunis provided us with a lot of papers for list pointers, if any of you remember that. I've lost track of Volker, but I think he's in Montreal now. And Ralph Mueller has two very interesting, what I think are reasoning-type programs, Screamer, the constraint program that was mentioned briefly yesterday, and the thing he's working on now, Racer Pro, a reasoner for OWL and OWL Lite. So this could be a very interesting application. I know Screamer's been a successful commercial application, and anytime we hear dollar bells ringing, that's a good story for Lisp. So I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Ralph Mueller from Hamburg.
Thanks a lot. I would like to present some ideas about the Racer system. And I have to mention that this is joint work with Volker and Kai and Michael, who is also here. There's a lot that I can present, so I will have to focus on some important aspects here. And so I will try to tell you my impression about why Lisp was useful for developing this kind of application or this kind of technology for building applications, if you like. So I started Lisp programming in 1985 with Rainer, some of you might know, and collected some pictures from Symbolics Machine in my museum, so if you're interested, you can have a look at that. But this is not what I'm going to talk about today. So today I will shortly introduce the main ideas of OWL, and I see OWL as a syntax for description logics, and I would like to argue that ontology-oriented, as the OWL way, is not directly object-oriented, so I will try to show where I see the differences. So I see the difference in that there are reasoning services that provide useful things for applications, but you have to use them in the appropriate way, right? You have to design your application such that reasoning really comes into play. And having said this, I will come back to the topic of my talk, and I will summarize some requirements for building a commercial reasoner. This affects the Lisp systems that the reasoner is built with. And so the question is, should we build this in Lisp? And the answer is yes. So this is already the take-home message for the impatient. But the more interesting question is probably why, and I will tell you my arguments. So what's different from object-oriented? So I would like to say that description logics allow for the management of constraints on possible worlds or possible models, those structures that make the logical formulae true, right? We can call this possible worlds, right? And at least in my opinion, OO is about one world, whereas description logic is about multiple worlds. So I argue that description logic support the accumulation of clues, if you like, pieces of information about objects of a certain domain, and description logic accumulate those pieces such that a coherent whole is created or generated. And deduction, the services, the reasoning services, reveal what holds in all worlds. And keeping this in mind, you can construct your application that then uses the reasoning services. I would not like to argue that in description logics, data is described, whereas in OO, data is represented. So even if I talk about particular objects, I might have disjunction involved. And in order to show you what this means, I have, this doesn't work very well, so I can go back to the keys. I will show some examples that use reasoning services. Well known, probably, is ontology classification, known from OWL editors. I will show some examples in order to demonstrate to those of you who are not familiar with this technology what that means. But there's more reasoning than meets the taxonomy. It's for me, more interesting is the reasoning about instances, right? Or individuals, as they are called. So let's assume we can follow a conversation that goes as follows. The two people talking to each other. So, did you have a nice holiday? Yes, we went to France, and it was nice as in Italy, where we usually go. Little piece of information, right? So we have houses in both countries. Oh, lucky you. Do you have contact to your neighbors? Yes, one of the neighbors is one of my best friends, even. We're often invited. Ah, and you tasted this year's wine with your neighbor, right? Oh, wine tasting was fine, but how do you know? How do you know that? My friend also likes wine. This example shows you that on the left-hand side there's a DO reasoner, and on the right-hand side there's somebody given pieces of information. You can call it a web if you like, right? You can grab some pieces here, grab some pieces there, right? You've got the picture, okay? And so the reasoner, the left-hand person, can then argue, well, that's easy, let's do a little logic. And so I assume, so now we're talking computer scientists, right? Not natural language. So I assume that French people drink wine, so let's put this as an axiom in the standard notation. So French implies that drinks wine is true, and I assume that Italian people drink wine. Italian implies drinks wine, and they are not French. Okay, so very simple axioms here, and probably both agree on that. And then comes information about the individuals. So there is a friend mentioned, friend one, right? And so he's either Italian or French. So we have a formula. I can use the remote for pointing, I guess. So it's, we know about friend one that he's Italian or French. I mentioned either, and either because French is disjoint, Italian, sorry, is disjoint from French due to the accent. And now asking whether friend one is an instance of drinks wine holds leads me to the following, says the left agent. Now let's assume friend one is Italian, right? Well, then, due to the axiom, it's apparent that drinks wine is true. But hang on. The other says, how do you know that friend one is Italian? Obviously, the left one does not know, but he just does case distinction, right? On the other hand, he could be French. Let's consider that case. So let's assume this is true. And as you might guess, in this case, drinks wine is true as well. So in all states of the world, it is true that your friends drink wine. It's an artificial example. Don't take it seriously, right? But you got the idea, okay? But the question is, are we sure that we cover all cases, right? I mean, humans are not good at that. Reasoning with disjunction, at least I'm not good at that. I can't generalize. The all is pretty tricky. All is, there's some human that is not good at doing disjunction. It's me. So it's a proof. seriously. So we for the reasoning with disjunction, we can use description logic systems. For instance, the racer system might be good for that. The example would work if we could capture the semantics of natural language, but that's another story I'm not going to solve here. I think you got the picture about the individual. So you can answer questions based on disjunctive information, right? So you can give definite answer based on disjunctive information, based on indefinite information. And things are not that easy, so there's the ontology. Let's have a look at this example. It's from Enrico Franconi, who's an Italian, so probably some designer for an ontology might have this in mind, some picture from Venice, and now he constructs it's the domain model, so there's a person, right? I don't know, Italians, specific persons. And since we're in Cambridge, I use this example, English. You see here, again, this disjointness pattern. This is from UML, it's not accent, but you get the picture, I guess. So, and then Italians. There are two kinds of Italian, lazy ones and the Latin lovers. Both don't overlap, but it's all what we have about the Italian. So this is covering, right? Simple axiom, Italian implies or lazy Latin lover. And it's not my example. I have stolen it, but it's a compelling example. So English. So English means to be a gentleman or a hooligan, and we don't know whether they overlap or not. This is unspecified, right? You can't tell. You never know. So, and then comes the innocent modeler says, "Well, I would like to have the Latin lovers to be gentlemen. Make sense? Do you?" Let's see what the description logic system would say. Well, since the Italians and the English are disjoint, and Latin lovers, the set of Latin lovers must be a subset of the gentlemen, the Latin lovers must be the empty set, right? Otherwise it won't work. So unfortunately, there are no Latin lovers in our world, which might be okay, but then there's something happening that you don't want, since the lazy guys and the Latin lovers cover the whole Italian guys here, all Italians are lazy, and this is certainly a modeling error, which has to be revealed. And this is what description logic systems do. End of the story? No, not yet. So, and there are Italian professors. And very simple Italian again, so some lazy guys, some mafiosos, some Latin lovers again. So we know that those sets are disjoint. And we assume that those two sets, the union of those two sets, covers the whole Italian set, right? And then let's add another Italian professor. Couldn't be harmful, right? So assume this is a very, very large domain model, so you can't really directly see that there are the other constraints, right? So you just add Italian professor, subset of Italian. This is a subclass, if you like. Okay. And what does that mean? So since those sets are disjoint, and we also add that Italian professors are not mafioso guys. Make sense? I would say yes, right? Italian professors are definitely not lazy. So those sets are disjoint. So where to place the Italian professors in the union of these sets, so Italian professors must be Latin lovers. So you get implicit subsumption relationships that you may want and may not, I can't tell. So this is what is derived. Some people would say that this is a modeling error. I think you now have seen the main ideas of how to use description logic. And this applies all to UML, right? This is nothing for academia, it's mainstream. And already you need reasoning for UML diagrams, which is pretty tough, by the way, if you use the full expressivity and do reasoning with this. So description logic has taken the chance to hop on the train with the ontology community. And so I would say an ontology is a T-box and an A-box. T-box contains the axioms about the concepts, whereas the A-box contains the assertions about the individuals. And previously this has been called knowledge base. New names, never mind. So the T-box does not say anything about how data is actually stored. So I could claim that if there are no restrictions imposed by the axioms in the T-box, then you can associate data objects more than ever. So it's not the flavor of modeling here is not to define slots in which you can store data or other individuals. This is not the business that we are talking about here. So in this sense, the concepts of description objects are not classes or DB schemas. They tell us nothing about actually underneath data is stored. This is our business. This is our research. And this is what we have been doing for the last 10 years, to find optimizations such that answers to reasoning questions can be given fast. Even the idea of having types and type system is a little bit different. So if for instance, you have a range restriction, as usual, slot of type person, and or manager work for project. So the project is then the type restriction, right? Then in OO, you would like to be able to prove before you associate a manager and a particular project that the object that you insert into the slot works for is actually a project. You check, usually, and make sure that there is no surprise at runtime. But the situation with description logic is different. Now, if it is not known that something is a project, then, and it is used as a filler for the works for slot, for the right-hand part of the relation tuple in the works for relation, depending on your view, then it is a project by definition. And what could happen is that due to the axioms in the T-box, the whole thing gets inconsistent, is unsatisfiable, and we have to check this. But, you know, this is what reasoning means. If you say it's a filler for the slot, for the role, then it must be a project, and so it is, bad. And this is what then is implicit in the statement that you explicitly give. Too bad if this results in an inconsistency, then something is wrong. This is again a modeling error, which will occur at runtime. We might find ways to check for this at compile time, but this is for later. So you do not declare in beforehand that a filler is an instance of a certain type. You have to know this if you build applications on top of those description logic systems. They are different in the flavor of how modeling is used. And OWL is a syntax for specifying those restrictions. I would claim that OWL is not enough for building practical applications, and our system, the Razor system, provides more than other DL systems even. So we have constraints. There was a presentation on constraints and finite domains in this conference. There's a streamer system that might come in here. We also have rules. This is for the DL aficionados. DL safe rules with other epistemic semantics, but I don't explain this here. We have rules with time variables such that you can do reasoning about intervals, get min-max bounds, lower bound, upper bounds for the starting point of event, end point of event, something the like. And we also support qualitative spatial reasoning based on this region connection calculus that is quite well known. And I think what's important for our applications is that Razor provides an expressive query language. So you can have conjunctive queries with some extensions such as negation as failure and similar things. It takes a little too long to introduce those details here. But so how can we implement a reasoner in Lisp? Lisp is a very nice language. I like it very much. But, I mean, usually developing a reasoner is tricky. It's the complexity of the matter that requires that you first think and then hack. So I think the claim is that agile engineering, or prototyping, or getting things to run fast, is hardly possible. So you first have to come up with a solid theory, and have to understand how the calculus that does the reasoning really works, and then you can start implementation. I mean, usually the calculi are given by non-deterministic algorithm, and this is then where the real work starts, I could claim, right? So you have to implement some clever search techniques, and you implement search techniques, but basically you want to avoid search. So this is the whole business, right? You have to search, but you avoid unnecessary search. And this is the idea of our work. We develop optimization techniques. But we do exploit the functional implementation style. So, I mean, if you would like to then debug a program that does search not in the correct way, and then you can inspect the state, and we do this with a functional style of programming, and we rely on tail call optimizations, and we benefit from compilers saying whether a tail call is necessary or not. We also use functional style programming in the sense that for actually doing the backtracking with different choices, we use continuations, downward continuations in Common Lisp, where the search tree is set up somewhere during the control flow, where it is expanded somewhere later. And maybe this is not clear at the time where you define the different branches, right? And because this is subject to optimizations, you don't do stupid chronological backtracking, but you define what has to be investigated at some point where the information is available, and then you schedule when actually the search is done. So continuations are just fine for this. We also exploit the meta-level facilities of the Lisp language in that we built our own domain-specific tracing facility. I could give you a demo later on. It's a little bit too small here. But this search algorithms are very tricky, and control flow is quite hard to understand sometimes. So we implemented our own tracing facility. And I think Lisp is very helpful here because you can just implement your own wrappers for functions, say, right? We use some generic functions with specific method combination and the like. For the data structures, we initially started with lists, because my idea was, implementing a reasoner can't be that difficult, let's just do it. I'm not so sure that I was right at that time, but I mean, okay, I think we got it somehow. So we started with recursive procedures, and as parameters, we passed lists. And you know, the lists represent what the system currently explores. It represents the search tree in some sense, right? And so the idea was to have a recursive program that does the search, and the state is represented by the list, by the argument list, the usual way, right? And I mean, we just use const if there is a new insight that the reasoner derives, and then recurse. Not bad, the idea, but it didn't work well because there was always the problem with stack size. And something that I learned, I should have known before, but it looks so innocent. So if you have some dynamic variable, some special variable here that you need for storing information if backtracking occurs, then this means that something is put on the stack. So the dynamic binding looks so innocent, but I mean, if you look under the hood, it's tricky. Right? I should have known in advance, but you might agree that sometimes you can't see it from the code, but you have to understand the compiler then in order to acknowledge what's going on here. It can't be done otherwise. It's not a problem with the compiler. So we changed our implementation style with the list to some new approach, and we use now box data structures. So we put all those lists into a box, the Java way, right? But we don't manipulate those boxes destructively, so we still use the cons to put something in front of the list, but we then also copy the wrapper. So we have a complex cons. Copy the wrapper and then do the cons, and then you reuse the structures underneath. Go to the picture. So we do more consing. We also cons the box, the wrapper box. I thought that couldn't work. I was wrong. And then I was happy because this gives a lot much better structure for your program. So you don't have information spread among different lists. So you have one object representing the state. And functional style, this is my message, still works. Don't be afraid of consing boxes in front of complex data structures. Still, we have to exploit structure sharing, so we can't copy all of those lists in order to produce a whole new box. This, I guess, will never work. So we explicitly store now the state on the heap, so we don't use tricks such as this one here. because then you have tailed calls, and the algorithm looks much better than having other tricks. So then, third phase, we found that counting in lists still no work. More complex applications, larger A boxes, larger ontologies, right? So we needed set representations and matrix representations for the simplex and the constraint stuff. And the whole architecture uses the following technology. So what needs to be counted in order to ensure practical functional programming style with structure sharing when modifications occur gets larger. So the idea is that we have a description of the search space plus the data structure, and we would like to have a functional programming style such that our trace facility works, right? If you don't have a functional programming style and the tracer with which you can folder after the program is being run, then you always see the same object, the same contents. We don't want this. We want to have state. If we fold up the tree at the end of the program run, right? Otherwise it won't work. You only see the last version of your structure. You know this. You all know this. The alternative would be to print on standard output, but you know this is not possible due to massive output. Then. So this is the main architecture. We use functional programming in our technology. You can do it in another way. I won't defend this under all circumstances. And the idea was that copying sometimes hurts, although we try to do structure sharing as in most situations possible. So we also changed the architecture again to do some lazy copying. So if we have non-determinism, then copying is required. But if we have no non-determinism in our recursive program, then there's no need to copy in advance. So we copy when it is really needed in order to do the back, to arrange for backtracking. Occur correctly. So the requirements for a commercial reasoner, and also I would argue for serious research. So we need application generation. This works fine with the Lisp systems that we use. We would like to have a server and a GUI. And we need the application, the server application, to be embedded in standard IP communication infrastructure, TCP, HTTP, and so on and so forth, right? And we have to support the standards, otherwise nobody would really use our system. Although we have our own language, Lisp-based language, for the Lisp community, most of the world likes XML and likes to adhere to the W3C standard. So it takes quite some time. And we also have to, for a commercial thing, for we have to support Unicode. Thanks to Kuroda for giving me hints about how to manage this. He's still here. I can tell. Nessie, you need also end-user documentation. This is really a black hole where you can invest time. For many industrial applications, we need to support incremental querying. So it makes sense for some information retrieval scenario to support getting the next 10 tuples. And then I will ask again if more tuples are required. How can you do this in your programming language? You could do it with the full continuations, such that you're able to store the states in scheme. This is not available in Common Lisp, so we used the process systems and kept the process there and just stopped it. And then when there's a continuation request, getting the next 10 tuples, right, coming in, the process is activated again. But you need a pool of those processes.
Been there, done that.
Pardon?
Been there, done that.
Yeah. You've got a pool. Yeah. If you have processes and multiple incoming client requests, you need thread safeness, which is not that easy to achieve. Very important if you have reasoning. If combinatorial explosion occurs, you would like to say, no, I give you 10 seconds or 10 microseconds and get me what you have in that time period, and then it's okay for me. And this makes coding much harder. I mean, because if you have a process running, and you would like to have timeouts, then you need another process, watchdog kind of thing, right? And then this interrupts this guy, but you can't really shoot it because, then you have corrupt, maybe, possibly have corrupt data structures. So you need to send a signal such that sometimes you can recover and then find a handler for this signal such that you can arrange for data structures to be not in an intermediate state, right? And then you kill yourself. But you see, things get tricky. And there are many research prototypes available, reasoners that have been done by other groups, sometimes faster than ours. But you see, for this commercial stuff, you would like to support timeouts correctly, then you have to pay a fee for these additional services, which some people might not be interested in, but for large scale, this is important. We need testing and debugging support, and we implemented our own testing facility that does a set of tests from the suit with permuted parameter settings. So we have optimization parameters in order to deliver a system with a fewer number of bugs. What we do is we run the test suite with different parameter settings. This takes, I guess, 2 days, and check with our expected results database. And it happens that there's one minor thing that reveals only under particular circumstances, and this is what we do. So we have this test suite. Again, what is the problem here with the tests? If you have specific parameter settings, right, then reasoning might get slow, depending on specific optimization being switched off. And what that means is that you also need the timeouts in order to then say, if you need more than 3 days for one particular test, then you just skip it. But you don't know in beforehand, so you need timeouts in order, and then you have all this regression problem. It was not that difficult with common Lisp technology to open different threads. Although this is not standardized, I don't really see it as a problem. You have your abstractions for your program, and features for the compilation. Not too difficult, works. But you have to use the processes, otherwise it won't work. So if there is standardization going on in the Lisp community, I'd be interested in this stuff being standardized. Although I know it's tricky. We use the common Lisp technology with the handler bind and handler case. I really like the techniques that you can define functions that you can, in your control flow, that you can just send down and that are executed when the error occurs, rather than the control flow being thrown to the point where the handler is defined. Yeah, and then the stack is away, and then you don't have access to the bindings. I guess this is the Java way, the catch and try, and you don't have access to the local bindings. This was really helpful for me in common Lisp facility, and I guess Scheme as well. I'm not that familiar with Scheme. We have a cooperation with France Inc., which is a very successful cooperation. So we can discuss with them whether there are specific optimizations possible. And I'm not exaggerating if I say Allegro CL is now the fastest platform for Racer. There are various lists that we can compile the system with. So we have two systems, the Racer Pro Server and the Racer Porter, as it is known. This is the GUI. It's a rich client that connects to remote servers, multiple servers, if you like. 10 minutes? Sorry. So if you're interested, I can give you a personal demo afterwards. Right? So the commercial version is done with Allegro Common Lisp and Acerve and Allegro Graph. it's an application. There are also Fezzles available, and if you really wanted a DLL to be accessed with JNI, we can also develop an application with Listworks and CLHTTP for the XML interfaces running over HTTP, and we use Wilbur for the RDF old stuff. We have extended Wilbur slightly, and I've sent the patches to the developers. We develop with Macintosh Common Lisp, but can also use other Lisp, maybe with a subset of all features. So if there is no persistent triple store, we just disable the functionalities. OpenMCL, CLISP. Somebody ported CLISP to run on a mobile. He asked me, could you produce a Razor for the mobile? And yeah, I did it. I mean, nice thing. I mean, can't remember what happened with this. Probably battery capacity. Don't know. Memory, maybe. So, ABCL, there's a prototype for compiling Razor with ABCL such that you can run it in a Java virtual machine if you'd like. Don't ask me about the speed. So, the GUI is available for Windows, Mac OS X, and Linux. The GUI is done in Listworks, Common Lisp, for platform independence, and it is an application, which you get for free, by the way. We might profit from more powerful data structures if they were provided as libraries by somebody stolen from Java, huh? Maybe converted. Maybe there should be a native implementation, and maybe supported by vendors. We could profit from a really cool representation for sets, because lists are too slow if you then linear iterate over the elements for the element test. This doesn't work for long lists, and we have sets with 100,000, 200,000 elements during search. You all know this doesn't work in the linear way, right? I look here better. So, functional style for adding elements is preferred by us, because then we can use our tracing facility, folding up things in a postmortem way, right? And the element test, it's an element in a set, should be almost constant. And it makes sense to change the set implementation on demand. So there are phases where just elements are added, and then counts is just fine. But then there are phases where there are some tests run on the set, it's an element in the set, and then count is not a good idea, and then you might change to a hash table. But coming up with a really stable implementation of this is quite tricky. And we use several buckets. So we start with counting. This exceeds the limit. Remove this. Put it in a hash table. Start counting again. Counting, right? Next hash table bucket. And then while backtracking occurs, we hope that counting will be effective. We can just chop off the head, right? And from... It happens that you also have to access the hash table again, because during backtracking you have to then withdraw some elements from the set, right? In a functional style, obviously, but anyhow. So then the set is restructured. And so these are the heuristics that we use. But would be nice if somebody could provide a library for this. Something often neglected is GC awareness, so hash tables are not that easy to deal with, so we need a pool in order to avoid GC run-in riot and so on and so forth. And aside is, I know that macros are very fine for this burst, but they are unknown to others, so usually others expect that we have domain-specific languages with a concrete syntax, and we have abstract syntax tree, and we need parsers for going from the concrete syntax, XML, like stuff, right, to an internal representation, right, and then go back, and we provide this for going from Lisp representations to the abstract syntax, and then you render this out, and all this is what we provide. I mean, this is for the commercial world. All right, skip this a little bit. So, We need reasoning support for RDF triples. I call the triples the concells of the semantic web. So we read knowledge bases from triple stores, which are supported by Allegro commonlist quite well. And they have a new system for this that we will integrate. And we would like to evaluate queries with reasoning involved. So we have the query language. I don't explain the details. The language is Nurkle, called Nurkle NewRacer query language. And up to now, reasoning is done in main memory, but we would like to also go with secondary memory. And this is for the future. However, as usual in practical applications, reasoning is not always required. So we translate the queries to queries to native queries for the triple store. And in 90% of the applications, you don't want to have reasoning. So you could store all your data in A boxes. I mean, this is like the following. So if you only know a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And if you would like to use description logic for everything, then you will lose, because you can't cope with relational database query answering speed. But then if you use them, you have no reasoning, no subsumption being respected for query answering, and so on and so forth. So I would say programs as known to... So would you run programs on an A box? I would say probably not, because programs are made for single worlds, whereas DLs concern multiple worlds, multiple different worlds, as we have seen with this French or Italian example in the beginning. And you can give definite answer even if indefinite information is the basis. So the reasoning stuff, T-boxes and A-boxes, comes into play if subproblems of your application can be reduced to formal inference problems. This is not the case with all parts of an application, right? So it makes sense to also use standard computer science technology. And you obviously you don't want to have copies of the data structures. So it's very important that you can use both. You can use the native interface from France to access the triple store even from Java, or you can use Racer if you rely on reasoning. Select the query language you prefer, OWL or Sparkle. So real applications have huge sets of data descriptions, large A boxes, and we have run experiments with 16 gigabytes. Ooh, you know what happens when they are garbage collected in a full garbage collection? This is tricky. So we have to deal with garbage appropriately. If you have a large knowledge base, a huge A box, this will never ever be garbage. But I mean, if you don't declare this, it will be scanned every now and then, which takes a minute, maybe. But this is really long, right? And so we need some fences to prevent the garbage collector from touching things that are no garbage, by definition. So we use some ACL-specific features to install fences, such that, I mean, this doesn't make sense to look for garbage in areas where there is none. One application that we investigate is media interpretation in our lab. And you see in this street scene, there is a garbage collection event, another one. And the goal of our research is to detect those events. And you know why I like this? Then I can show that Racer deals with garbage correctly, right? In summary, I would conclude that Lisp is fine for the algorithms. We use incremental compilation for development, although everything is theory-driven. There's no hacking, essentially. Communication, TCP, HTTP, no problem with standard systems that we have now. XML, RDF, OWL, maybe a little bit harder. We invested some time to deal with that. We'll probably be supported by vendors. France already has the triple store with RDF support. I don't think that Lisp system specificities are really a problem, so we have conditional compilation work fine for us. The message for me is just invent new things if they are useful. Don't be shy. cool web interfaces with hop technology. Cool thing. I mean, if there is a Lisp system that provides this, I will use it. No, what I'm saying is I don't need standards for everything, right? Application generation is not really a problem now. In the demo yesterday, we have seen just click a button. I have shell scripts for my issues. Maybe there are license issues, but I don't comment on that. So the conclusion is, at the heart of description logic in general, and DLs in particular, everything relies on satisfiability checking. This is the reasoning stuff. It has to be applied here in a slightly non-standard way, and you know what that means? Lisp satisfies. Thank you for listening.
Boxes, I guess it was, and the backtracking. This looks an awful lot like the old interlist idea of spaghetti stacks, and particularly as they were implemented on special purpose hardware, where it would actually just do stack when there was no retention or backtracking, and when there was, it could strip out the environment part boxes, and you would have a thread of, a chain of.
You're right, I agree. We could use this technology.
How did you implement these restartable processes without major configurations?
I mean, what we do is we have a pool of standard processes, and they evaluate the query, and they just produce the tuples, and then if there are enough tuples, then the process is just stopped, put aside, and then reactivated again, and then it continues its loop. This is not a problem.
Okay, so something like...
Theoretically, continuations would be better, I guess, yes.
Okay, so sorry. Threads, processes, whatever is available, right?
Sorry, I didn't get that.
It can be lightweight threads or processes...
Yeah. Then common is lightweight processes. Don't be shy.
Yeah. You have the coffee break now. And we try to go back at 10:50 if it's possible, because we are a little bit late.
Thank you.